DW WorldLink with Gabriel Borud.
Hello and welcome to DW's WorldLink. I am indeed Gabriel Borud, and I'm coming to you from Bonn, Germany, where, as we record the show this week, hundreds of people are standing outside joining in on a global climate protest that is set to become the largest of its kind in history. Are you skipping work right now?
Yeah, it's quite important to actually skip work and be here because, you know, we need to take cognizance of the fact that the amount of CO2 that we are releasing every day into the environment is way too much and we need to minimize it.
Okay, that's just one of hundreds of demonstrators here. We're going to devote the entire show this week to the environment, and it will include two installments of DW's brand new podcast, On the Green Fence. So please, do stick with me this week on WorldLink. You're listening to DW's WorldLink with me, Gabriel Borud, in Bonn, Germany. Like I said before there at the top of the show, I am standing outside of DW headquarters here in Bonn, Germany, and hundreds of workers here at Deutsche Welle and other places around the area are skipping work to take part in a climate strike that is and will be continuing throughout the world. Thousands of people have taken to the streets all over Australia, throughout Asia, all around Europe, including here in Germany, where some 400 events like this one right here have been planned. I'm just gonna walk into the crowd here. Can I butt in here? Sorry to stop you from singing. Why are you here?
Yeah, because of all the problems we have regarding climate. We need to do something. Everybody should do something.
Okay, and standing around
here. At least standing here, being part of it, and show the people you're in this.
What does that do just by standing here?
It gives you more importance.
All right, okay. More importance. How important is this to you, this climate strike?
Most important. There's nothing more important. Most important.
Okay.
Thank you.
Where do you work?
Bundesnetzagentur.
Oh, so right down the street. Okay. Let's just keep on walking through here. People clapping. Sorry to jump in here. What are you doing here right now? Are you skipping work?
Yeah. Yes, but most of all, I'm here to listen to the two ladies.
To the ladies?
Yeah.
What are the ladies singing or doing?
I wasn't sure because we couldn't hear that much in the beginning, but...
DW having technical difficulties,
yes,
somewhat ironic.
Yes, but now the song was good.
But what about in terms of the climate protests? Why are you standing out here together with all these people?
Because I'm still young, and if I want to have children, it would be nice if we leave a good planet behind, and that's the point.
Strong words. Thank you. Thank you very much. This week on the show, we are going to stick with the environment, but we're going to use the airtime to introduce you to a brand new podcast put out by DW. It's about the environment. It's called On the Green Fence. It's a 5-part audio miniseries that my dearest colleague Neil King and I put together this year. We examined questions like what all of our futures are going to look like in the face of the warming climate, what she just said, whether our world is going to be fit for our children. We tried to figure out why the world wastes so much food and why so many species are dying and what farming may have to do with it. We also went down to the Black Forest to see what the return of wolves means for shepherds down there, but also for greater society, what the return of wildlife means for society. And we investigated a water scandal in the heart of Bavaria that raised the eerie question of what really is in our drinking water. That final episode about the water scandal in Altötting, we're going to play that for you right now. So sit back and have a listen to episode 2 of DW's On the Green Fence coming to you right now.
On the Green Fence.
This is On the Green Fence, the new environment podcast from Germany. In the third episode of this mini-series, Neil and Gabe are thrown deep into a water scandal where you would least expect it.
Vanessa, hi.
Good morning, Neil. Hope you had a nice weekend. Did you get my mail about the water story?
Yeah, sorry. I meant to get back to you about that on Friday before I left, but...
I didn't hear from Gabe either. Well, did you guys read the article at least?
It's right here.
Also von vorne. Listen, there's this district...
Wait a minute, Vanessa. Let me just put you on loudspeaker so Gabe can hear you too.
Okay.
Hey, Vanessa.
Hey, morning.
Okay, shoot.
So, there's this district in the state of Bavaria where thousands of people have been contaminated with this chemical PFOA because it ended up in the drinking water.
Wait a minute. PFOA? What's that?
Yeah, it's a chemical that's used for textiles or non-stick pans, for instance. Actually, it's a very useful chemical in many ways, but it has been linked to cancer.
And this ended up in the drinking water? How?
There's a large chemical complex near a town called Altötting, and it looks like the PFOA production there might have polluted some rivers, the air, and ultimately the wells that supply the district. So, I'd like you to take out the DW car and head down to Altötting to do some digging. Find out how the locals are dealing with the fallout.
So you're sending us to Bavaria?
Yeah.
Awesome!
Exactly.
Better take some bottled water with us then.
Oh, and Gabriel?
Yeah?
No speed tickets this time, okay?
Oh, you got it. You got it, Vanessa. No problem.
You got it.
Hey, Gabe, I've been doing a bit of reading up here on the whole PFOA scandal in Altötting, and are you listening to me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Am I on the road?
Did you know that the company responsible, the US conglomerate 3M, they actually stopped producing PFOA at the Gendorf chemical plant in 2004? That's over 15 years ago.
Yeah, but Neil, this is still a story because of the chemical makeup of PFOA. It just doesn't degrade. It is so persistent that even though they're not producing it, the levels, the contamination, is still rising in the water and in the soil.
Yeah, and actually, it says here, the WHO, they suspect it can cause cancer in humans. The EU has decided to ban it outright as of 2020, and the UN is considering a global ban. I'm quoting here from this text. So, I mean, no matter how you look at it, right, this stuff really shouldn't be in the water. And the worst part of this whole story is that the vast majority of the citizens in this Altötting district that we're driving to, they apparently had no idea.
Let me just get this straight. The authorities knew there was PFOA in the water, but they didn't consider the levels high enough to alert the public?
Yeah, that's about the size of it. It's unbelievable.
Well, I also did some research.
What?
And guess what? There was a similar PFOA scandal in the US, and it involved 3M. A number of other companies as well, but it also involved 3M.
And?
3M settled with the state of Minnesota for almost $1 billion over PFOA contamination.
Do you think the people in Altötting have a chance of securing that kind of compensation as well?
I doubt it, Neil. I doubt it.
Why not?
The levels in Minnesota were way higher than the ones here in Bavaria when it comes to PFOA.
How much higher?
10 times. Even more.
All right.
Just let me enjoy this drive here. Steeples going by. Look at those people on the bikes over there.
Yeah, just take it easy, all right?
It's beautiful.
Actually,
German.
Gabe, slow down. Slow down. There's a speed camera coming up. Slow down.
I got it. I see it.
So are you going to tell Vanessa that we got Blitz leaving Bonn, or should I? Gabe. Gabe.
Just let me enjoy this.
Upon arrival, Neil and Gabe were surprised to learn that Altötting is, in fact, one of the most important Christian pilgrimage sites in Germany. Every year, 1 million people come here in search of healing at a holy shrine where, in 1489, a 3-year-old boy was miraculously resurrected after drowning in a pond. Today, over 100,000 souls live here. Just off the main square, which lies wedged between three churches, is the Hotel zur Post, an establishment that's over 700 years old and has housed a king, a pope, and Mozart. Tonight, it's housing Neil and Gabe. While both slept well, something just wasn't right for Neil.
Neil, you're not looking too fresh this morning. What's going on? Did you sleep well?
Yeah, I slept all right. I didn't have a shower. Usually, I take a shower. Well, I don't know. I'm just a bit wary of the water here, to be honest.
Are you serious? Think it's going to seep through your skin?
I don't know. There could be all sorts of ways it could get into your system. There's this chemical that's been in the water, this PFOA. I mean, Okay, I'm telling you now, all right? I'm not a hypochondriac, but this morning when I was brushing my teeth, I even used the water from the bottle. I didn't use the tap water. I'm just steering clear of the tap water as much as I can.
What's wrong with you?
I just don't want to take any risks, you know? There are people here.
You've already drank the water.
What water? I didn't drink any water.
You've had coffee.
Damn, I hadn't thought about that. Well, I guess we have to make certain compromises, okay? I can go without a shower, but I can't go without any coffee anymore.
After breakfast, Neil and Gabe head down the road to the nearby village of Kastel to meet Edmund Pichler. He's lived here all his life and is one of tens of thousands of people whose blood is contaminated with PFOA, a fact which was confirmed in a blood screening last year. To Neil's relief, he doesn't offer any water or coffee.
You've ever had these, Gabe?
Oh, yeah, those fat white ones.
The ones that you eat with this sweet mustard.
But in true Bavarian style, this hospitable retiree serves them some Weißwürste and beer as he tells them his story.
My name is Edmund Pichler. Ich wohne hier in Kastel.
My name is Edmund Pichler. I live here in Kastel, a contaminated area, and my PFOA blood level is 43.3 micrograms per litre.
3 microgram per litre.
How does it feel living with this chemical in your blood?
Well, of course it's not pleasant to know that I have this toxin in my blood, in my liver, because that's what it is, poison. This toxin does not belong in my body, and most certainly not in our tap water, because that's where I got it from. And yes, I'm concerned about my health. I'm afraid, like all the others here, but there's nothing we can do about it.
For some time, you didn't drink any tap water whatsoever. When did you actually, you know, realize, okay, there's a problem here, I'm not going to even risk drinking this water?
Once we got the test results, we stopped drinking from the tap immediately. We switched to bottled water.
And what about other, you know, like having showers or, you know, washing your hands or brushing your teeth?
No, we only stopped consuming it. No drinking from the tap, no coffee, no cooking with it. But for everything else, we had no other choice but to use it in the garden or for washing ourselves.
Obviously, this stuff got in the water somehow. Who do you actually blame the most in this whole chain? It's a very complex chain. Who is the villain here?
I'm no lawyer or judge, but I think the American company 3M knew exactly what it was doing when it developed this product 50 or 60 years ago. They knew that PFOA accumulates in the body, especially in the liver and the blood.
Vor allen Dingen in der Leber und im Blut.
What is it that would amend the situation?
First and foremost, I want clean drinking water. It's what our body needs most. We can't do without it. I'm not interested in compensation, but I am worried about my properties that I own here. They're all agriculture plots, and they're contaminated. And I still don't know how badly. What happens if this land one day can't be used for agricultural purposes because of PFOA contamination? At this point, it's hard for me to determine just how great a loss that would be.
Those sausages were amazing.
I really like the sweet mustard with these Weißwürste, yeah. Starting the day with a beer, yeah, takes a bit of getting used to that.
Neil, that beer was made with water.
Sure.
You think it had PFOA in it?
Oh God, well, I hadn't thought of that. I guess the water is sourced from here. It could be, yes. I mean, just think about it. If PFOA is in the air, right, the ground and the water, it can basically end up in all agricultural products you can see around here. Everything, all these fields.
Everything that's organic, too. So let's meet this farmer. Pichler mentioned.
Yeah, I've got his name here. Hang on. Andreas Bernhofer. So let's see. It's just down this road. And on the right-hand side, that's where he should be, branching off there. Anyway, this Bernhofer, he's married. He's got four kids, and they've all got 10 times too much PFOA in their blood. 10 times. Even the youngest. 18 months, she was only breastfed.
Oh, my God. And this guy's an organic farmer, man.
Yeah. Okay, here we are. Dorfstrasse. So that's him over there. That's his house.
All right.
Right next to that big barn. Yeah, I assume it's where the gate is open there on the side. Ah, morgen, Herr Venhofer. Morgen. We're standing here in your vegetable patch, and you've got all sorts of vegetables here that you're growing for your family, for your own consumption.
Have you had your plants here tested?
We sent off a cucumber, apples, blueberries and raspberries to the authorities for testing over 6 months ago, but they still haven't sent us back the results.
A half a year they haven't gotten back? Wieso?
Ich weiß es nicht.
I don't know. It only took 4 weeks with the animals. My pigs are heavily contaminated.
Die Analyse da.
But you will carry on eating these vegetables, harvesting them. You're not buying your food in the supermarket.
Wir machen weiter, weil
we're going to carry on eating them. If you buy something, you can't be sure whether it contains pesticides or not. All my vegetables here are organic, and we think that despite the PFOA scandal, this is still better than all the conventionally farmed products you get in the supermarkets.
Konventionelles Produkte aus dem Supermarkt.
Da geht's rein, okay. Are you saying good morning? Good morning, Mr. Pig. Yeah, we've got some pigs here. We've got some goats here, chickens. Oh, there's a chicken fight going on.
So you moved here, what was it, 8 years ago? Is it possible that you had PFOA in your blood before you came here, or is it definitely that you got it since being here for the past 8 years?
Das PFOA ist definitiv von hier.
The PFOA is definitely from here. We used to live in Mangfalltal, which is also the main water source for the city of Munich. The citizens of Munich do not have any or very little PFOA in their blood. They are certainly below the guide value of 2 micrograms that the state health authorities have laid out. The Munich residents have around 1 microgram.
Ein Mikrogramm.
Nobody told you that this scandal was going on, because it's been going on for a while, and you came here and nobody informed you that you might be in danger of getting this in the blood through the drinking water. Is that correct?
We were not informed. If anything, we were told we had the best water in the entire region. It was even sold to other municipalities.
Andere Gemeinden verkauft.
The fact that your children have it in their blood, can you describe your feelings?
Tja,
the authorities keep saying that the levels are not life-threatening. But in the long run, this entire cocktail mix of chemicals we're exposed to may well have an impact. What is annoying is that we have our own chickens. I have my own fields for farming. I don't use any artificial fertilizers or pesticides. It's all organic here. And we're doing this to have healthy food on the table. And despite my efforts, all this is now contaminated with PFOA. That is annoying.
Dann ist das ärgerlich.
Annoying. Annoying? Understatement of the year. Yeah. I would be livid.
Yeah, so would I. Especially when it involves your kids, right? That's a red line.
So what are we? 5 miles off from the chemical plant, right?
Yeah.
That's downwind. And this is the area where the soil was investigated, right? This study happened here.
Last year, yeah. That's where they discovered at least 192 square kilometers are contaminated.
And that study, which, by the way, 3M commissioned and paid for, says the level of contamination poses no endangerment to humans.
Yeah, well, tell that to the Bernhofer family, huh?
No kidding! Mm. And just think about it. Pichler and Bernhofer. That's just 2 examples of the tens of thousands of people here in the same boat.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, some of them, they formed the pressure group, right? Because they feel they have to get organized because the authorities are just dragging their feet on everything. Actually, why don't we go to that Stammtisch, that weekly Stammtisch that Pichler mentioned?
Stammtisch?
Yeah. Oh, God, it's windy here.
Stammtisch, that weird German concept where you go to the same table, the same place, the same time.
That's it.
Every week.
Yeah.
Or except, every day, even.
Yeah, except that this one's in a hotel restaurant, so Hotel Plankl. Altötting Town Centre. It's actually just 2 minutes walk from where we're staying.
Let's go.
As Neil and Gabe arrive at the Hotel Planke, a group of around 15 predominantly older and stern-faced Bavarians are already huddled around a heavy oblong table in a cozy side room. They've been meeting here every week for the past year to discuss their PFOA strategy. A young waitress in Bavarian dress serves the drinks.
Yo, Neil, There are way too many people here. We can't interview them all.
So who do we go for?
That guy there, at the end of the table, with the beard.
Why him?
He's the only one whose accent I can understand.
We started this group after blood banks rejected our donations. We were not informed about the PFOA poisoning here in the district. Only after campaigning and putting pressure on the authorities have we achieved a certain degree of transparency.
Okay, so Neil, there clearly are a lot of people in this region who say that they had absolutely no idea that there was PFOA in the water.
Yeah. It's the exact opposite, pretty much, of what the authorities told us. Do you remember what the District Environmental Protection head said? Robert Müller.
Ever since the authorities were made aware of PFOA in the late 90s, the district administration provided extensive information and regular updates to the citizens of Altötting. In the meantime, carbon filtration systems have been installed so that the entire population has access to PFOA-free drinking water.
And do you remember what Robert Müller told us when he was off mic after giving us that statement?
Yeah. About his conscience?
His conscience was clean.
He also said the levels, they just weren't high enough to issue an all-out warning, right? That it would have been alarmist if they'd sort of issued that warning.
I find it weird, though. I mean, in Germany, you get a letter for a parking ticket.
For anything, really.
And speeding tickets. I've gotten a number of those letters.
Yeah.
But about this, that there's a chemical in the water, nobody was informed with an official letter?
Yeah. I find that really strange as well.
It's fishy. Yeah. I mean, those filters, they had better be good.
Let's call it a day, Gabe. We're meeting Pichler pretty early at those filters tomorrow morning. And
all right, man, go crash.
The next morning, Neil once again brushed his teeth with bottled water. He also decided, albeit reluctantly, to take a shower. Gabe wasn't worried in the least. He had faith in the active carbon filtration system set up on the outskirts of town in the Oettinger forest.
Okay, ready to check out these filters? Let's go. Herr Pichler, steigen Sie bitte ein. We're getting in the car now, okay. So, Mr. Pichler, these filters that we're driving to now, they were installed to clean the water. Is that the end of the story for you? Does that solve the problem?
I
think this can only be a temporary solution. In the long term, we need PFOA-free drinking water.
Only PFOA.
Okay, so...
Left.
Herr Pichler, are you happy about these filters?
Eigentlich nicht.
Not really. I'd rather get water from a different region, water that doesn't have to be filtered.
Straight through.
Is that
it up there?
Yeah, da vorne sind die Filter.
That white big construction. Okay, it looks like a sort of a upside down water tank. Okay, let's go and have a look at it.
Wow, this thing's huge.
Let's see how close we can get to it. Okay. So we've got like two large cylinders. They're about 15 meters high each, about, I'd say, 2 to 3 meters in diameter. And any water that comes through this filter afterwards, the PFOA is broken down to an absolute minimum.
Based on how long it takes for PFOA to leave the environment to dissipate, this is going to be the solution for a long time.
I believe that you'll be able to trace PFOA in the raw water for hundreds of years to come. Don't forget that PFOA concentration is still rising because it takes years for all the PFOA to seep through the ground into the groundwater.
Mr. Peter, you just mentioned the source, because obviously the water that is purified here comes from somewhere. Maybe we can go and have a look at the source?
Yes, we can take a look. It's in the forest, about a kilometer from here.
Okay, let's go.
Are we going to walk?
This is an unbelievably beautiful forest.
Huge.
Is this land here? Yeah. Seems untouched. Is this contaminated with PFOA?
Is mit PFOA contaminated?
Yes, it's heavily contaminated. The PFOA in the air is caught by the leaves of the trees, and when it rains, it falls down on the forest floor, which is then contaminated.
Und durch Regen und dann ist es wird kontaminiert.
Herr Pichler, that then also means this forest is full of wildlife. So all the animals here, they're also contaminated with PFOA.
Yeah, but not just the animals, the mushrooms or anything that grows here. Now we're scared of collecting mushrooms, something we used to do here every autumn. The forest used to be something special, and my feeling now, it's negative.
Das ganze Gefühl ist negativ.
After a 20-minute walk through the forest, the three arrive at the well. They're all alone as they stare through the chain-link fence that protects Altötting's tainted water supply. The sun is shining, but the mood is somber.
There's a well right in the middle of our great forest, and we always believed we had the best water. But then the PFOA catastrophe took that away. It's really quite depressing, because this is our Heimat, and we can't do anything about it. It's not our fault.
Es ist unsere Heimat und wir können nichts dafür.
Why don't we head to where this all began?
Yeah.
To the chemical plant by the river.
Yeah, let's go.
We can get all the way down there, right?
We should be able to walk there. Okay, so Mr. Pichler is taking us here to the river Alz. Directly opposite me is, on the other side of the river, is the chemical complex Gendorf. Huge chimneys, smoke rising. Actually, very ugly scenery.
Apart from the company over there, this river is really beautiful.
That over there, that gushing water that's going into the river coming from the chemical plant,
Is that coming from the plant right there?
Yes, that's from the plant, for sure.
And that's where the PFOA would have entered the Alz.
Yes, I think so. Of course, there might be other entry points too, but this is certainly one of them.
Mr. Pichler, this chemical complex employs a lot of people. They depend on it for their livelihoods. A lot of chemical products, we need them, we use them. Where do we strike the balance between this need and our environment?
I mean, we mention...
We humans have grown accustomed to a lot of chemicals. We need them. This complex employs around 5,000 people. Our region depends on it. However, I think humanity has to do everything it can to keep these chemicals out of our environment. That's the task of humanity.
When we were talking to Robert Müller at the county council, he was saying that if you live in the vicinity of a chemical complex like this, you just have to live with the possibility that chemicals are going to enter our bodies. What do you say to that?
Da widerspreche ich nicht, aber man muss alles Menschliche tun.
I don't deny that, but I still think we have to do all we can, also financially, to limit the damage to the environment.
Mr. Pichler, thank you very much for your time.
Gerne.
There's one voice that's been missing in this episode, the company behind the scandal, 3M. Neil and Gabe's request for a personal interview was rejected. Instead, they were given statements.
3M coordinates closely with local authorities on PFOA-related environmental issues to ensure compliance with regulatory requirements. Today, PFOA concentration in drinking water in the county of Altötting is below the current guidance value of 0.1 micrograms per liter. The State Office for Health and Food Safety was unable to detect any relevant PFOA concentrations from the food chain and has advised that these foods can be eaten, except for wild boar. Industry and authorities are currently discussing how best to manage the soil within the district.
Okay, dear listener, you're back with me, Gabriel Borud, here in the studio at DW on this hijacked edition of World Link, where we are promoting the podcast On the Green Fence. You just heard an episode there about a water scandal in Bavaria. You're going to hear another one coming up about the return of the wolf down in the Black Forest in southern Germany. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you guys for listening and also for getting in touch. One person in particular, Johannes E. Rutte, hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, wrote a review of On the Green Fence on his blog, The Well-Equipped Naturalist, with very nice thoughts on our podcast and what we're doing. So many thanks for that. And upcoming now is episode number 3, The Return of the Wolf. The big bad wolf is back. DW's On the Green Fence. Here it is.
Vanessa, hi.
Hi, Neil.
Was geht's?
Put me on speaker, please.
Yeah, just a second. Okay, Gabe can hear you now, too.
Hey, Vanessa.
Hello. The wolf.
The wolf? The wolf?
Yeah. We have to do a story about the wolf. The wolf is back in Germany, and the numbers are growing dramatically.
Hold on. The wolf is all over eastern Germany. It's been like that for 20 years, Vanessa.
Yes, there are an estimated 1,000 wolves here now, and they're spreading throughout western Germany, too.
Yeah, actually, you're right. Just the other week, right down the road from my house, a wolf was spotted at a children's playground.
Amazing, what? You see?
Well, serious. The people were really concerned.
You never told me about that.
Well, why should I tell you everything all the time? It skipped my mind.
You know I love wolves.
Yeah, well...
Okay. Wait. Jungs, hört mal zu. The story is not just about the wolves, okay? It's also about how we humans are dealing with this idea of wildlife returning. It's a debate that's taking place in many countries, not just in Germany.
It's a huge topic in the U.S. too. I mean, especially since 95, the reintroduction of wolves in Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. In Idaho, you can hunt them.
You see?
So you want us to look into the impact the wolf is having in Germany, or what we're supposed to...
Exactly. So, wolves are starting to settle in the Black Forest, which is a great habitat for them. There have been confirmed wolf attacks on sheep, and I've checked. There is a local sheep breeding federation that can set you up with a shepherd in a high-risk zone.
Sweet!
And there is also a leading wolf researcher, his name is Peter Zürt, who lives in the Black Forest. And there is also a place way down by the Schluchsee where a wolf was shot, so you can get both sides of the fence in one trip.
So wait a minute, hold on. You're sending us to the Black Forest?
Exactly.
Maybe the Brothers Grimm had the Black Forest in mind when they wrote their version of Rotkäppchen, or Little Red Riding Hood. You may know the Black Forest for its cuckoo clocks, its Schwarzwälder Kirschtorte, or cherry cake, and traditional dress. But if you actually get here and walk the forest paths, padded by pine needles that can't conceal the snarling roots beneath, you may find yourself in the footsteps of Little Red Riding Hood, with the big bad wolf lurking in the shadows of the towering trees.
Why? Look at these trees now.
Yeah. You can understand why it's called the Black Forest, huh?
And it literally, it feels black.
Yeah, so dense.
Inside here. It's all the pine trees.
Yeah. I used to come here a lot as a kid. With my family, we used to stay in a youth hostel near the Feldberg, and we used to do these hiking holidays. Those were the days. Anyway, we need to get up this hill here, Gabe.
I'm already up it.
Hey, did you tell your kids? What we're working on this week?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Ava was pumped.
Really?
She told me to take a picture.
Okay.
Of a wolf, you know, if we do see one.
Because I didn't dare tell my boys.
Why not?
They're so scared of wolves. You know, the fairy tales that we've got at home and all that, the pictures of the wolf. They can't even look at it. They're really scared.
I mean,
I guess the brothers Grimm, the German masters of fairy tales, they did know how to scare us.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the grandmother lived away in the wood, half an hour's walk from the village. And when Little Red Riding Hood had reached the wood, she met the wolf. But as she didn't know what a bad sort of animal he was, she didn't feel frightened.
I mean, Neil, just think about the image that the wolf has in popular culture today.
Yeah.
Do you know any children's story where the wolf isn't evil or bad?
Well, there's only Wolfie Wilson.
Wolfie Wilson?
You don't know him?
The hell's that?
The wolf who wouldn't wash?
No.
It's just about the only wolf that my kids aren't scared of. Actually, he does look more like a scruffy puppy, though, than a wolf, I must admit.
Wolfie Watson? Wilson?
Wolfie Wilson, not Watson.
Anyways, what's the plan today?
Okay, well, so first off, we're meeting the wolf expert that Vanessa set us up with, Peter Zürt, in Seebach. We're meeting him in his local cafe there.
Why are we meeting him in the cafe? Why don't we interview him out here in the forest?
I don't know.
He's a wolf expert.
He wanted to meet in that cafe, right? And we're lucky that we're interviewing him. He's the leading wolf researcher in Germany, all right? So maybe he's into that Black Forest cake or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and then we got the shepherd. Where are we going to interview him? An ice cream parlor or what?
Oh, God, will you stop it? God, what is wrong with you today? We're meeting the shepherd at his farm, all right? He's got something like 500 or 600 sheep. He's in the middle of a high-risk zone. And when I spoke to him earlier on the phone, he sounded really worried, actually, about the wolf.
I wonder how much of that fear is actually justified.
Yeah.
I can't wait to meet this guy.
Well, that question, just exactly that question, is what we're going to talk about with Uta Jürgens, right, the psychologist. We can ask her that.
That's tomorrow, right?
That's tomorrow. So we do...
Uta Jürgens.
Yeah.
You know where she went to school, right?
No, I just know that she's an expert on, you know, why people are so scared of wolves.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Birds of a feather.
Here we go again. Have you got any secret handshakes for her when you meet?
Shh.
What?
Did you hear that?
What? I don't know you into birds.
No. Oh, never mind. I thought I heard something.
Oh.
Let's get dessert.
Okay. Got another
Where's
one.
Where's this
cafe? Well, it's just over that hill over there. About another hour's walk. I'm actually quite pleased we're meeting him in a cafe now. I could do with a coffee.
Are you gonna get cappuccino, latte macchiato, or what?
Yeah, well, Black Forest style.
Wildlife biologist Peter Zürt is already waiting as Neil and Gabe enter the cafe. Wearing hiking gear, bulky boots, and sporting a scraggly beard, he looks as if he's just returned from one of his expeditions tracking wolves across Europe. He lives for the great outdoors, and his calling is to minimize conflicts between human beings and wildlife.
What is it about the wolf that you find so fascinating, specifically about the wolf that really attracts you? Or
the social system of wolves is very similar to our human social system. Here in Europe, you have the family, two adults, and the youngsters.
Okay.
And between the youngsters, there's like with our children, there's a kind of a hierarchy.
My children are like wolves themselves. When they can be quite wild.
Mine are like hyenas.
But just maybe debunking some myths, because I remember as a kid, I was always interested in wild animals as well. And how do you react if you might meet one? Mm. And I was always told if there's a bear, you know, don't climb a tree because they can climb trees. Lie down on the ground, pretend you're dead. With wolves, I was told don't run away because that will provoke them to run after you.
That's nonsense.
What do you do? Is this all nonsense? What is myth? And what do you do in a situation?
How much more time do we have?
Okay. Keep your answers short.
What would you tell your child?
I'm talking with it.
You talk with the wolf?
Yes, of course. When I'm in the forest and I'm going to meet an animal, doesn't matter what it is, I'm talking, I'm greeting it. Sorry that I was disturbing you, that I didn't want to disturb you. We are using the same area in the same moment.
You literally say that in German to the animal?
In different words. Somehow I'm talking with it and just make animals aware that I'm there. And with my voice, I can calm them down if the meeting is unexpected for them and for me.
But do you stand straight? Do you make yourself small?
No. I'm just staying. With wolves, I'm just staying there and say, hi, wolf. Nice to see you.
it's really too bad that a sheep can't just do that.
Yeah.
And go, bah,
hey, wolf. I mean,
because they're not going
to
listen.
No. All animals are talking to each other. But sheep, is a prey animal. I'm not a prey animal. That's a big difference. I'm extremely dangerous. Immediately I can take a weapon, I can take a stick, and it's suddenly a weapon. I can take a stone, and it's suddenly a weapon. No animal can just take a stone and throw it after it. But we can do it. That makes us very suspicious for wildlife, but they're still coexisting with us.
Let's say a shepherd loses one of its flock, loses a sheep, and is really, really, really angry that there are wolves here, that a wolf took something away from him. You are someone who, you're a proponent for wolves. You think that wolves should be here. How do you explain that to this shepherd?
I'm saying that wolves are coming back. And this is the situation. What we have to learn how to deal with all kind of wildlife in future. We are not living alone. The earth is not only for us.
After leaving Peterzurt, Neil and Gabe take the car and head deeper into the forest, up the Schwarzwald-Hochstraße, a scenic road with snaking bends and steep passes. On their way to see the shepherd who lives about an hour's drive away, they see something unexpected.
Neil, stop. Stop the car.
Did you see that?
No, come on.
Back up. Back up. Yeah.
Why?
Did you see that?
What?
Get out.
Here.
This sign, the banner. Der Wolf frisst kein Gras.
You almost made me crash the car because of a wolf sign saying wolves don't eat grass.
Well, look at that, look at those teeth.
Look, there's another one over there. This is probably why exactly, you know, what we're talking about. Attacks by wolves have gone up 30-fold in areas like this. And people are taking action now. They're putting up these, it's almost like a campaign banner, isn't it?
Wow. Here, we gotta get to Fry.
This is just one of several anti-wolf banners along the road. Neil and Gabe have now entered an official Rissgebiet, that's German for wolf territory. As they head up the jagged path to Jörg Frey's isolated sheep farm, they feel for the first time that the threat of wolves is real here. They can also see it in the eyes of the weather-beaten 41-year-old shepherd, who welcomes them with a crushing handshake.
Also, mein Name ist Jörg Frey und ich habe seit 20 Jahren.
My name is Jörg Frey. I've been a shepherd here in the Schwarzwald for 20 years. I built everything here with my bare hands.
Bin wie gesagt seit 20 Jahren selbstständig jetzt.
We are standing in front of how many sheep? Wie viele Schafe sind das?
600.
600 sheep. They're not making a noise. They're incredibly quiet. How afraid are you of the return of the wolf in Germany when you think about your 600 sheep here?
Sind wir hier, also bei mir jetzt gerade in der Gemeinde Barsbrunn, Wolfsgebiet?
Well, this sheep farm here is in a designated wolf zone, because just down the road in Wildbad, a wolf killed 40 sheep in one attack. How do I feel? I don't feel good at all. I have a very bad feeling, as a matter of fact. It's always said that things aren't so bad and that we'll get reimbursed for the loss of any sheep. But what about the psychological burden? Every night when the sheep are outside, I'm afraid for their safety. And let's be clear on this. The wolf comes to kill what belongs to me.
Das ist mein Eigentum. Der Wolf frisst mein Eigentum.
What do you do if the wolf actually does attack your flock, given that he's protected in Germany? You're not allowed to shoot wolves in Germany. How would you react? Would you shoot him?
Das ist eine gute Frage. Ich hoffe immer noch, ich hoffe inständig, dass...
That's a good question. I hope, I pray, that one day the politicians will finally realize that protecting wolves is ruining people like me. Also, it's always claimed that the wolf hasn't attacked any people for the past 150 years or since his return. That's a blatant lie. It's politics, and it's always for the wolf. This is how it works. The moment you see a wolf, he's got to go. He's got to learn, I have no business here. I must stay in the forest.
Der Wolf muss lernen, ich habe hier nichts zum Suchen, ich muss im Wald bleiben. Wir haben seither Kinder spielen lassen können, ohne Angst, weil jeder hat sie kennt.
We used to let our kids play wherever they wanted and never worried about it. But the wolf is a killer, that's his job. And why shouldn't he attack a human? A sheep weighs 100 kilograms, a man weighs 80 kilograms, a woman even less, 50 or 60 maybe. The wolf jumps her and gets her by the neck, and that's that. Mark my words, this will happen, and it won't take long.
Und das kommt, das passiert In Zukunft, das kommt nicht, das geht nicht mehr lang, haben wir das Problem.
You said before that the psychological aspect of the wolf is something that bothers you. What does the threat of the wolf mean to you?
Ja, der Wolf ist schon im Hinterkopf, ist schon präsent, aber das ist wie der Tod.
The wolf is in the back of my mind. It's like death. You think of it now and again, but you hope it doesn't strike until later. And it's the same with the wolf. When my sheep are outside, I can't sleep at night. I wake up every half hour. The psychological strain is immense. And on top of that, I've got people accusing me of being too lazy to put up the fence right. That's when I ask myself, am I just everyone's fool? Or what?
What the experts are saying is that the wolf or wolves are going to come, and more of them are going to come here to the Schwarzwald. Would you ever give up what you're doing here because of that?
Ja, sehr wahrscheinlich wird der Tag irgendwann einmal kommen.
Yes, that day will most likely come. How long can you cope if every morning there are shreds of your flock lying around? And they're not all dead. Sometimes the wolf has just torn parts out of them. Imagine if a savaged ewe is still alive and her lambs need her. You can't relieve her of her suffering. These are pictures you can't get out of your head. I know it's against the law, but if the wolf doesn't leave me alone, I'll go after him.
Der Wolf mich nicht in Ruhe lässt, werde ich nach ihm gucken.
Thank you very much, Mr. Frey.
Bitte, bitte.
The sun is setting as Neil and Gabe leave Jörg Frey's sheep farm. That night, they stay in a nearby hotel. It happens to be called Hotel Jäger, the Huntsman. The Huntsman heard him as he was passing by the house and thought, how the old woman snores. I'd better see if there's anything the matter with her. The night is uneventful, apart from Gabe's bed breaking without warning in the small hours.
I'll just sleep on the floor. How does a bed break?
He skips breakfast and joins Neil just in time to meet psychologist Ute Jürgens. She's one of few people researching why wolves trigger such intense emotions in humans, and where better to interview her than the very place where a wolf was dumped after being shot.
Okay, so we're standing in the beautiful Black Forest, and we're at a site where a wolf was actually killed. Ute, how did that event go down back then?
So it was a really big thing. And the reactions that we got from people were really, really ambivalent. So some people were really like glad that a wolf was shot. For example, sheep herders or hunters who are not that fond of wolves. And other people are really not only sad, but enraged. Because in their view, we as humankind should be able or should be willing even to live with other agents, like animal agents in this region and in general.
Why is the wolf such a big deal?
So I think what we're talking about is something very deep-seated within the human soul or the human mind. You will have a lot of people answering this question by saying that, well, we have those fairy tales about Little Red Riding Hood or the Three Little Pigs, and this like educates people into not liking the wolf. And on the other hand, we have the question of why the wolf entered those fairy tales in the first place. Why don't we have fairy tales about bears? So there is something lying within wolf ecology that stirs up thoughts and emotions in human minds. And this is, I think, the deeper-seated reason why wolves are such controversial issues.
You said right there that it stirs up things in the mind. What does it stir up?
Well, wolves challenge our self-image as humans. Wolves, on the one hand, are top predators, so they have a kind of similar position in the chains of being. And on the other hand, they show us that we don't have complete control over nature. And for centuries, we have thought we had that control over nature, and we have eradicated all large predators in mid-Europe. And now the wolf is coming back, and whatever we do or do not do, we cannot change anything about it. So the wolf is just sneaking around corners and lurking even in backyards, and maybe you know Carl Gustav Jung's concept of the shadow, which is the mental room in which we harbor all our suppressed and evil aspects of ourselves, aspects that we don't like about ourselves, destructive aspects, aggressive aspects that we have dissociated from. And wolves are kind of a primordial image which calls this archetype within our own soul. And there are people that have really kind of befriended the dark part within themselves, and they can like accept wolves much easier. And others may not have done that so easily. The wolf reminds us of the evil within ourselves and within the world, and the relationship that we have to this concept of evil also influences the relationship we have with wolves.
We talked to a shepherd who said in the summer months when his sheep are out in the open, he can't sleep at night. He sees the wolf as death, and he has real, I think it's probably psychological issues also with the wolf. It's really impacting on his well-being. How do you treat that from a psychological standpoint? I mean, how do you go about, you know, making life easier for this man?
If I had this solution, how to help those guys, I would be a really, 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 really happy person. I do not. So I think what really is important is that we take serious the concerns of those people. What I can do from a psychological standpoint is just point to where I think that emotions overrun objective facts. And maybe also help with identifying those emotional aspects. And then hopefully trying to help people deal with their emotions on the one hand and still remain able to talk to each other even though they have really different positions on the other hand.
When we talked to the shepherd before we interviewed him, we asked him, we said we've met a wolf expert, and would it be possible to bring him along for the interview? And on the phone, he said something like, "What? We no, absolutely." He was really, really against that idea.
Very adamant. Yeah.
So how in the world are you going to bring people from these camps together?
Well, I guess there are positions that cannot be reconciled, definitely. It's like with every other societal problem that we have, you will always find people that cannot talk to each other. Like if you wanted to bring AfD politicians together with people who really care about migrants, it would be a similar challenge. So I think what we would need to do is find people who are interested in the matter and at the same time really open to other positions.
You just mentioned Germany's far-right AfD party, and what I kind of find interesting researching this story, some of the phrases and terminology were actually quite similar to the wolf debate. You had words like welcoming culture, or you had words like Obergrenze, a cap on wolves. And there is a certain parallel in the debate, isn't there? And are there the same fears that people have? Is it the fear of the unknown? Or what is that fear?
My working hypothesis is that it is the same mental rooms that you enter with wolves or with crows or with spiders. So I would say there might also be a possibility of relating fears in really different political contexts to the fears that you have that come up with wolves, but this would be a pure speculation.
Okay, so we human beings and the wolf are now in the same environment together. And what you were saying before, it's almost as if we don't want to share this environment with another being, another predator, who can act on his own. Is that the case? We just don't want to share?
Okay, so there are people who say that we would need to share our world with animals, and even with animals that might challenge us in some ways. And there are other people that would say that we do not need that, that we shouldn't actually be sharing our world with other agents. And these are in the nature philosophy, we call this the anthropocentric position, saying that we as humans are the center of existence and everything should just yield to us and to our needs. And the other position would be called the biophilic or the biocentric position, saying that we are a network of being and that we as humans are one part in this chain of being and there are other chains. And I think these deeper views about humans and nature really inspire the views we have on wolves and on other potentially problematic species.
And then out came the grandmother, still living and breathing. But Little Red Riding Hood went and quickly fetched some large stones with which she filled the wolf's body so that when he woke up and he was going to rush away, the stones were so heavy that he sank down and fell dead.
Hey, Gabe, wait. You're going too fast. It's the wrong way. We have to go this way.
No, we got to go that way.
No, it's down here. Believe me. I've been here before, all right?
You've been here before?
My youth hostel days, all right?
Oh, yeah.
Been all around the schlucks here. Anyway, so we've got another 3.5 hours hike in the Black Forest. That's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, having talked to, you know, the shepherd, the wolf expert, and the wolf psychologist, what's your takeaway? From all this, is the return of wildlife a good thing?
Absolutely. I'm really thrilled, happy that they're back.
And what about the shepherd?
I want more. I want them to come back faster.
And what about the shepherd's concerns?
No, they're real. The man feels left in the lurch, and for good reason. And I think that more has to be done to help him, or at least give him guarantees.
Compensation, right? Although it wasn't just about compensation, it was about these blind spots, yeah? Like when a sheep might escape because it's panicking and the wolf's around and it runs onto a road, Germany's so densely populated,
yeah.
Might cause a car crash, people are injured or killed, and then he's liable.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned the word compensation.
Why?
I know what it feels like not to be compensated.
What?
Hotel Jaeger?
Oh my God, you're they still on about that.
Neil, where I come from, you would not only be given a free night's sleep, you'd be given extra compensation, like a free shower curtain or a free pillow.
Gabe, will you calm?
20% is laughable.
Will you save your hot air for TripAdvisor, all right? This is completely irrelevant right now. We're talking about the return of the wolf. Now, seriously. The return of wildlife, right?
Yeah.
In industrialized countries, densely populated countries like Germany, it comes with challenges, yeah? It's not just all romantic and, oh, wonderful, the wolf is coming back. People like the shepherd, like Jörg Frey, they're having real issues. And some people are still really scared of wolves. Despite everything that Peter Zürt might say, you know, in terms of that they won't attack humans. We're not their natural prey. So I think this has to be managed, you know?
I agree. But at the end of the day, we're not more important than anyone else, than any other species.
No.
It's our world.
We have to share it. I agree. We have to share it. And also, if you look at the balance, you know, 80 million Germans, and how many wolves? About 1,000?
There is no balance there. Look how big this forest is. We haven't seen a wolf. That's why I came here.
Seriously, I mean, the chances were mega slim that we would see a wolf, right?
Well, we still go, what, 3 hours?
It's about a 3-hour hike, but seriously, 20 years. We come back in 20 years, as Peter Zürt said, all these forests in Germany will have wolf packs.
Mm.
That's your chance.
Yeah, whatever. I still got my fingers crossed here.
Anyway, let's just enjoy the remaining 3.5 hours we've got here in the Black Forest. I just love hiking here.
Shh.
What? Not again.
And just to let you know, we did not find any wolves on that trip, much to my chagrin. Hey, thanks for listening into that episode, to these two episodes of On the Green Fence on this hijacked edition of World Link here. I really hope you liked it. We put a lot into this project, and we would love for you to listen to the other remaining episodes on the Green Fence. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out and get in touch. We would really appreciate it. We're thankful for every single listener. All right, I am done now. WorldLink comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Thanks for listening.
Made for minds.